Welcome back to the Roundtable. I'm Ian Pickus. For the past 8 years, my guest, Shankar Vedantam of NPR, has been giving WAMC listeners regular updates on social science research and what it tells us about human behavior. Frequently heard on Morning Edition, Vedantam is marking 4 years of the Hidden Brain podcast, where he explores the unconscious patterns driving our choices. Recently, he's reported on everything from cycles of outrage in our politics to what monkeys can teach us about people. Shankar Vedantam, welcome to the Roundtable.
Thank you so much for having me, Ian.
You've been at this idea of hidden brain for a long time. What do you mean by it?
So the hidden brain is a term that I coined when I was writing a book about 10 years ago that describes a range of things that happens in our minds outside of our conscious awareness. So when we think of our own minds, most of us intuit that we have, you know, access to everything that's happening in our minds. But it turns out, as many, many clever research experiments have shown, a significant portion of what happens in our minds is actually obscured from us. It's hidden. And this hidden part of our brain plays an important role in shaping many of our choices, many of our perceptions, many of our decisions. And the world of the hidden brain in some ways informs many of the stories we do on the show.
Why is that? Why are there so many unseen forces?
Well, in some ways, to answer that question, you have to look at the brain from an evolutionary perspective. And from an evolutionary perspective, the brain is really designed to help us adapt to the world, survive, and function efficiently, right? It's a machine that's basically designed to help us navigate our world successfully. And it turns out that in order to do so, there are things that you should be seeing and should be paying attention to, and there are other things that you probably should not be seeing or you should pay less attention to. And this is just from a purely functional perspective, that it actually improves the functioning of the brain to see some things and not see other things. So, for example, at a very, very basic level, if I were to ask you, what is your name? You would tell me your name was Ian, and you're aware that you've told me your name was Ian. But if I ask you, are you really aware of all the different processes that go into how you're able to discern what the question is and answer it? You know, your ears have to pick up the sound of the question. Your brain has to decode those sounds into a sentence. The centers of your brain that process language has to decode that sentence into something that's meaningful. Your memory systems have to retrieve the answer from your brain, and the motor systems in your brain have to direct your mouth to say that my name is Ian. Now, we know that all those things have to happen in order for you to give me a response to say that your name is Ian, but much of that happens outside of your awareness. So even if I tell you that all of this is happening, you still, if I ask you, what is your name, you have really no idea how your brain is doing all those things. It needs to do those things, but you're not aware of it. Very much in the same way that when you watch a play in a theater, what you want to see is what's on stage. You don't really need to see what's on backstage. And in some ways, seeing what's on backstage would come in the way of what's actually happening on stage.
A lot of times you report on the ways that our unconscious actions have a negative impact on the way we move through the world. Are there benefits to a study of the decisions and the functions that are happening below our awareness?
Oh, all the time. In fact, when you think about how the hidden brain has come about, the hidden brain is the product of natural selection. It's our brains, in some ways, is a product of evolution. And many of the things that cause us, in some ways, to be led astray often have roots that have been very helpful, at least to our ancestors, if not to us. But it's absolutely the case that even routine functioning, you know, routine aspects of how the hidden brain functions are very, very useful to us. So as I'm sitting here talking to you, for example, my brain is instructing my core muscles to keep my body sitting erect in a chair. So I'm actually able to talk before the microphone that's in front of me. I wasn't aware that my brain was doing it. I wasn't thinking about it, but my brain actually needed to do it. So in many ways, the hidden brain plays a salutary role in our lives much of the time, because much of our lives actually doesn't require our conscious, deliberate attention. The problem arises when we employ the same autopilot function to very important questions, especially questions involving our well-being and the well-being of others. At times like that, you would prefer that your brain is not being flown on autopilot, but your brain is being flown consciously and intentionally.
How did you get interested in this field?
I was a science journalist for many years, a print journalist first at the Philadelphia Inquirer and then at the Washington Post, and I covered a broad range of science topics, but I eventually graduated to writing about the mind and the brain, partly because the questions in how the brain works and how the mind works seem to be the biggest unanswered questions in science. You know, we have a much better understanding of how the heart works and the functioning of the heart, for example, than we do with how the brain works. I mean, there are basic questions about why our minds do what we do, what they do, that are really opaque to us. We don't really understand them. The other reason that I really gravitated to this, to these topics, is because they're of great interest to audiences. I mean, everyone wants to understand why they do what they do, why their minds sometimes betray them, why their friends and family and neighbors and community sometimes act in ways that are incomprehensible to them. And so there's this marriage of the most interesting science taking place with the things that are most interesting to audiences. And the marriage of those two fields, I believe, is in the broad subject area of the social sciences.
Okay, this is a tough one for a short interview, but you're accustomed to that on Morning Edition. I know you've got the longer podcast for questions like this, but what has this type of reporting taught you about the nature of free will?
So that's a really interesting question. This has been a huge debate for a long period of time because, and in some ways it grows out of what you and I have actually been talking about, Ian, which is that the more scientists have understood about how the hidden brain works and the more they've understood that there are many, many, many facets of the mind that operate perfectly well without conscious interference, the question that arises then is not why do we have a hidden brain? The question that arises is, why do we have a conscious brain? If the hidden brain can do all these things, these remarkable things very well, do we actually need a conscious brain? And some scientists have gone so far as to say, yes, we have a conscious brain, but really it's an illusion. The illusion is that we actually are aware of what we do, we're aware of what we say, aware of how we think, but in some ways it's the hidden brain that's doing all of the work and then sort of essentially masquerading and pretending to us that we're actually coming up with these things consciously. There's some evidence for this. There are some very interesting experiments that show that people in some ways are making choices before they're consciously aware that those choices are being made in their heads. They're very clever experiments that can show that in some ways some of the choices we make actually happen before we consciously experience making those choices, which would lend credence to the idea that the hidden brain is doing all the work. But there are, I think, many other domains where it's unclear, or certainly you can make a very strong case that our conscious minds actually play a role. In some ways, I am agnostic on this issue myself. I think I personally feel there is such a thing as free will. And there are certainly plausible arguments that you can make that show how a biological system that is fundamentally deterministic as the brain is can produce things through a process of emergence, for example. We can talk about that if you like, that in some ways are unpredictable in the ways that free will is.
Sure. Say more about that.
Well, when you think about complex systems, there are very, you know, if you think about traffic, for example, when you're driving around on the road, you're a car and you're a driver and you're making individual choices that are very rational, right? So you slow down if the car in front of you slows down. You might speed up if there is a, you know, long stretch of open freeway in front of you. Now, all the other drivers in the cars are making similar decisions, and each person is acting in relatively rational, predictable and deterministic ways. And yet when you step back and look at the big picture of traffic as a whole, it seems as if the traffic in a city has a mind of its own. So if you see how traffic jams form and how they disperse, how they it almost seems that at a macro level, the traffic has a mind, not just that's composed of all the individual minds of the individual drivers, but it has a mind of its own. And scientists sometimes call these emergent phenomena because they're phenomena that emerge from deterministic processes. But these phenomena that emerge in many ways are unpredictable, unchaotic. The weather systems are another good example of this. You know, the individual molecules of air might follow a set of very deterministic patterns. You know, a molecule might move in one direction if it's hotter on one side or colder to the other side. But when you step back and look at all of the interactions of all the air molecules together, you have systems that emerge. You have storms that emerge, for example, that are in some ways emergent phenomena. They emerge from the deterministic actions of individual processes, but at a macro level, they in some ways take on a mind of their own. When you draw the same analogy to how the mind works, you can see how deterministic and biological systems in the brain that follow very systematic chemical processes at a higher level can produce systems that are unpredictable, like free will.
Last thing, what are some of the projects you've been reporting on lately that we can expect in the upcoming Hidden Brain episodes? What are some topics you're excited about?
One of the topics that I'm really excited about looks at how we make decisions about our end-of-life questions. You know, we're often told when our 20s and 30s and 40s to fill out advanced directives that tell us how to behave or how we would want the people around us to behave if we are struck with a terminal illness or a life-threatening injury, or we just happen to be very elderly and, you know, the time has come for us to for someone to make a decision, do I keep you on life support or do I withdraw life support? And the question that this episode is asking is it actually the case that when we're 25 or 35 or 45 that we can truly know how we would actually want to be treated when we're 75 or 85 or 95? Or is it actually the case that we're actually different people when we're 30, 40, 50 years down the road? Another episode is going to examine, you know, how economic transactions, which on their surface appear to be very scientific, actually follow rules of storytelling and rules of psychology. And even though our behavior as economic actors, both at the micro level and the macro level, can seem superficially scientific and rational, it's actually informed in many ways by storytelling and by psychology in ways that can allow those factors to drive everything from our consumer purchasing decisions to macro level questions, such as whether the economy goes into a tailspin and hits a recession.
Shankar Vedantam is the host of Hidden Brain, and you hear him on this station, often on Morning Edition. He's marking 4 years of his podcast. Shankar, thanks for taking some time for us, and keep filing these interesting stories.
Thank you so much, Ian. Really appreciate it.
And you're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.